TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness.
5G, Cellular Network Technology, Boris Johnson and Deborah Davis. Late in the evening of September 24, 2019, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson surprised the United Nations General Assembly in New York when he stepped to the podium.
Mr. President, Your Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, faithful late-night audience, it's customary for the British Prime Minister to come to this United Nations and pledge to advance our values and defend our rules, the rules of a peaceful world, protecting freedom of navigation in the Gulf, to persevering in the vital task of achieving a two-state solution in the conflict in the Middle East. And of course, I'm proud to do all these things. But no one can ignore a gathering force that is reshaping the future of every member of this assembly. There has been nothing like it in history. When I think of the great scientific revolutions of the past, print, the steam engine, aviation, the atomic age, I think of new tools that we acquired, but over which we, the human race, had the advantage, which we controlled. And that is not necessarily the case in the digital age. You may keep your secrets from your friends, from your parents, your children, your doctor, even your personal trainer, but it takes real effort to conceal your thoughts from Google. And if that is true today, in future, there may be nowhere to hide. Smart cities will pullulate with sensors, all joined together by the Internet of Things, bollards communing invisibly with lampposts, so there is always a parking space for your electric car, so that no bin goes unemptied, no street unswept, and the urban environment is as antiseptic as a Zurich pharmacy. But this technology could also be used to keep every citizen under round-the-clock surveillance. A future Alexa will pretend to take orders, but this Alexa will be watching you, clucking her tongue and stamping her foot. In future, voice connectivity will be in every room and almost every object. Your mattress will monitor your nightmares. Your fridge will beep for more cheese. Your front door will sweep wide the moment you approach like some silent butler. Your smart meter will go hustling of its own accord for the cheapest electricity, and every one of them minutely transcribing your every habit in tiny electronic shorthand stored, not in their chips or in their innards, nowhere you can find it, but in some great cloud of data that lowers ever more oppressively over the human race. A giant dark thundercloud waiting to burst, and we have no control over how or when the precipitation will take place. And every day that we tap on our phones or work on our iPads, as I see some of you are doing now, we not only leave our indelible spur in the ether, but we are ourselves becoming a resource, click by click, tap by tap, just as the Carboniferous period created the indescribable wealth, leaf by decaying leaf, of hydrocarbons. Data is the crude oil of the modern economy, and we're now in an environment where we don't know who should own these new oil fields. We don't know who should have the rights or the title to these gushers of cash, and we don't know who decides how to use that data. And can these algorithms be trusted with our lives and hopes? Should the machines, and only the machines, decide whether or not we are eligible for a mortgage or insurance, or what surgery or medicines we should receive? Are we doomed to a cold and heartless future in which computer says yes or computer says no, with the grim finality of an emperor in the arena? How do you plead with an algorithm? How do you get it to see extenuating circumstances? And how do we know that the machines have not been insidiously programmed to fool us or even to cheat us? We're already using all kinds of messaging services that offer instant communication at minimal cost. And these same programs, platforms, could also be designed for real-time censorship of every conversation, with offending words automatically deleted. Indeed, in some countries, this happens today. Digital authoritarianism is not, alas, the stuff of dystopian fantasy, but of an emerging reality. And the reason I'm giving this speech today with this slightly gloomy proem is that the UK is one of the world's tech leaders, and I believe governments have been simply caught unawares by the unintended consequences of the internet, a scientific breakthrough far more reaching in its everyday psychological impact than any other invention since Gutenberg. And when you consider how long it took for books to come into widespread circulation, the arrival of the internet is far bigger than print, it's bigger than the atomic age, but it's like nuclear power in that it's capable of both good and harm. And of course, it's not alone. As new technologies seem to race towards us from the far horizon, we strain our eyes as they come to make out whether they are for good or bad, friends or foes. AI, what will it mean? Helpful robots washing and caring for an aging population, or pink-eyed terminators sent back from the future to cull the human race? What will synthetic biology stand for? Restoring our livers and our eyes with miracle regeneration of the tissues, like some fantastic hangover cure? Or will it bring terrifying limbless chickens to our tables? Will nanotechnology help us to beat disease, or will it leave tiny robots to replicate in the crevices of our souls? It is a trope as old as literature that any scientific advance is punished by the gods. When Prometheus brought fire to mankind in a tube of fennel, as you may remember, with his brother Epimetheus, Zeus punished him by chaining him to a Tartarian crag while his liver was pecked out. I talked about a hangover cure. His liver was pecked out by an eagle, and every time his liver regrew, the eagle came back and pecked it again. And this went on forever, a bit like the experience of Brexit in the UK, if some of our parliamentarians had their way.
At this point of his September 2019 speech to the UN, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson abandoned his critique of internet technology and invited everybody to a summit in London next year to experience, quote, by far the biggest tech sector anywhere in Europe, end quote. Deborah Davis earned a PhD in science studies at the University of Chicago. She founded the nonprofit Environmental Health Trust in 2007. They provide basic research and education about environmental health hazards and promote constructive policies locally and internationally. She is currently visiting professor of medicine in Israel and Turkey. On August 23, 2019, she was interviewed by blogger David Wolf about 5G and mobile phone safety. 2 days earlier, the Chicago Tribune had shaken up the smartphone industry by publishing tests by an accredited lab that showed that radio frequency radiation exposure from the most popular smartphones measured over the legal safety limit. Here's David Wolf in conversation with Dr. Deborah Davis.
Okay, everybody, greetings. I'm David Avocado Wolf, and I've got Deborah Davis here, and we've got a breaking story about cell phones, mobile phone technology. Let's just jump right into it. Deborah, you're an expert in this area. Tell us what's happening in Chicago this morning.
The Chicago Tribune yesterday broke an amazing story. They took almost 18 months to get it out. They tested phones independently. The newspaper paid thousands of dollars for independent laboratories to test phones in the way that they're used, which is close to the body. And actually, they allowed even a 2-millimeter separation. And the results showed that most of the phones they tested, which were the most common phones used, the iPhone, the Samsung, those phones exceeded the current test guidelines some by as much as fivefold. That's five times higher than the current radiation limits.
My God. Okay, so tell us what that means to us. That means that we have a certain limit set by the
Federal Communications Commission of the United States.
The FCC, okay.
More than 23 years ago, set standards for testing phones. At that time, test standards were based on a guy weighing about 220 pounds with a 12-pound head who wasn't very talkative, who spoke for 6 minutes. The test was solely to measure whether or not his brain would get hotter or his body would heat up. Now, in fact, we know that test phantom was called a standard anthropomorphic mannequin. We called him Sam for short. We know that test mannequin is not representative of the majority of users today who are young, who are smaller, who are using phones in different ways. They're not necessarily talking on them, but they're having them next to their bodies. And close to the body, even when your phone is not talking, it is sending a handshake to the tower up to 900 times a minute.
Wow.
Saying, where are you? Here I am. Where are you? Here I am. And whenever it goes to ring, whenever it goes to answer, whenever it goes to download data, it goes to blip to max power. Now, what we understand biologically is that the biological impact of the cell phone signal is
turning my cell phone off right now.
It's not related to the power. It's related to the pulse of the signal. So mm-hmm. This signal is very irregular. And as it continues throughout the day being irregular, our cells, every cell of our body, is set to resonate with the normal electromagnetic pulse within our bodies that keeps our heart and our brain moving. And what these pulses can do over the long term is disrupt the ability of our cells to communicate, disrupt the ability of our cells to repair themselves, and we have natural DNA repair, and these processes are disrupted by this kind of communication. Now, the good news is the relative risk of getting brain cancer or horrible things like rectal cancer in young people is very small. But for a population, especially a population of millions, it can have a huge impact. So if we had a doubling or quadrupling of brain cancer, we would have 80,000, 100,000 cases. And sadly, today, for most cases of brain cancer, there is no cure.
Let's talk about your history with looking at cell phone radiation or mobile phone radiation. We've been, you know, just saturated in this stuff literally for decades now. What's happening to our young people with these mobile phones? And then where's it going to go with 5G? This is really concerning.
Well, I think anyone who's watching can understand the following. There are people who cannot go to sleep or get up in the morning without first grabbing for that phone. It's become like an extension of their bodies. They don't even recognize the extent to which they've become addicted to a technology that didn't exist 20 years ago in our lives. It's fundamentally altering the nature of human nature. It's altering what people have come to expect in interactions at lunch, at dinner, even in the bedroom. We can control it, but we need to understand it first. First of all, what the neurophysiologists can show us is that the cell phone radiation itself releases dopamine in the brain. Dopamine is the same thing you get with drugs, sex, rock and roll, cell phone radiation, good exercise. It makes you feel good. And when you withdraw that from people, it actually makes them feel bad. And so we have to understand that. And the really worrisome thing that the American Academy of Pediatrics has warned about is that young children are particularly susceptible to the addictive properties. And you have a physiological effect on the brain as well as on the vision. And we are seeing more and more children now with vision problems because a baby, and I mean a baby, can learn to swipe before it talks, before it sits up, before it walks, of course.
Jeez.
So infants are being given these devices in supermarkets all over the world as a kind of pacifier. You know, dad or mom is shopping and the kid's acting up, they hand them the phone. Look, I am a grandparent. I understand if your child is getting cranky, give them a phone on airplane mode. Maybe even have it turned off. They won't even know the difference for a while. They just want to hold something that they have noticed you care about. And so they want what they see you having. And frankly, we've got to stop this cycle now, because we are raising a generation of children that don't know how to relate to one another. They relate to the device.
Yep.
And then they don't want to look at you. And children are coming to pre-K and kindergarten, and they're expecting to be entertained.
For everyone joining us right now, I'm David Avocado-Wolf. I'm joined by Deborah Davis, and I've got to get your position on 5G antennas, 5G phones, and what's coming next, just to alert the people out there where this is going.
Well, we've had a generation of phones, 2G, 3G, 4G. It's simply the name the companies have given to the different technologies as we move ahead. And with 4G, you've had now the smartphone, 3G and 4G. They are functioning with a level of microwave radiation that functions up to 2.4 billion cycles a second, almost up to 5 billion cycles a second. That's what 4G is. It goes from 900 million to about 2.4 billion on average. It's the speed at which the transmission takes place. Now, 5G theoretically can go from 5 billion cycles a second all the way up to 100 billion cycles a second. Jeez. What that allows is faster transmission. If you're a police, fire, banking, military, industry, that's probably a very important thing. And they can make it wired. What I and several hundred scientists are objecting to, who are experts in the field, in a petition to the United Nations, is the fact that 5G is being pushed out as a wireless system that has never been tried before. And as the European Union commented in their policy analysis, the Americans and Canadians are going to build it and then figure it out.
Oh, jeez. So
they're testing the system on all of us, whereas many other nations that are doing this are working with a wired system. And if it's wired to and through the premises, then you do not get the wireless radiation exposures. But with wireless 5G, what you need is a multiplex antenna, set of antennas, every 100 to 200 yards in a dense urban environment, where the antennas cannot get through trees, cannot get through heavy snow, cannot get through heavy buildings, and so they're going to be plastered directly onto our structures, perhaps outside our bedrooms. And the way the laws are being written now, you have no say-so over whether or not a 5G wireless antenna will be right outside your home. That's what we object to, because there are a few studies showing that this 5G frequency, this faster frequency over 5 billion cycles a second, resonates with our skin. And the skin was identified just 2 weeks ago in Science magazine. Not only is it our largest organ, but it's now recognized to have within it sense organs, sensory receptors. And that is why the U.S. Department of Defense has developed a weapon that is based on a technology that is quite similar, that makes, when they blast it with a beam-forming ray, it makes your skin feel like it's on fire.
We've seen some video of that online.
The device focuses the beam. If you are out of the beam, you're fine. If you're in it, you are literally feeling as though you're fried. I'd rather see weapons like that than bullets and bombs, to be quite frank. But I don't want that in my neighbor's house or mine, right? And I don't want to have to be exposed to a wireless connection so that the guy next door can check out porn and video games. The most frequent time for downloading porn and video games, you'll never guess.
I don't have any idea.
It's 9 to 5.
9 to 5 in the afternoon. So it's just normal working hours. So what's happening is people skipping out of work.
They don't have to skip out nowadays. It's like a perfect storm. You can figure out ways to do this when you're so-called working. And unfortunately, because of the addictive properties of these games, we've created a whole subculture of subterfuge. And younger kids are really good at this, really good at this. So I think it's time for a reset. I think that 5G and the higher technologies belong in hospitals and in clinics, wired, not wireless. and it belong in fire stations and police stations. But in the United States, as an example, in California and many places, the fire stations have been exempt from having to put 5G or other antennas on their roofs. They're exempt because the fire people objected to symptoms they were starting to develop that had been confirmed and published, by the way, in the literature, showing that when masts were directly on top of the fire station, depending on a number of configurations, of course, that there were documented, confirmed symptoms of brain damage with functional MRI imaging.
This is crazy.
So we are basically conducting an experiment on ourselves, our children, and our grandchildren.
How many, Deborah, I've heard different numbers. How many peer-reviewed studies have been done on 5G antennas?
Well, it depends, again, the devil is in the details. With respect to 5G itself, millimeter waves, there have been studies for years done in Russia, originally, by the way, showing damage to the eye, without any question, okay? And eye protection was necessitated in terms of military exposures. That's been done for years. But with respect to 5G itself, first of all, we don't even have a reliable way to model that signal in the laboratory at this time, because again, we're trying it out on the road, so to speak. It's a kind of chicken and egg question. You can't really have a 5G network until you build one. They're scaling up, okay? The concept is these high frequency signals will go very fast and transmit things much more quickly so that you could download a movie to your phone in a few seconds. However, I want to say, as a public health expert, I'm deeply concerned about people trying to watch movies on their phones. It's not a good idea. We've got two things going on there. We've got a shorter focal length. You're concentrating. You're looking like that. And we have the blue light. And blue light, by the way, is not just blue in color that you can see. It refers to 440 nanometer spectrum light that is part of what's coming off of screens. Even if the screen is green, for example, there will be some component of that there. And blue light has some health benefits during daytime, but in the nighttime, blue light interferes with the body's ability to produce melatonin. Melatonin is a natural hormone that we produce in the dark. You should have no light in your bedroom of any kind, no electronic devices on in your bedroom of any kind, because what it's been shown to do in animal studies, that light increases the production of things that block repair and reduces the production of melatonin. So you need melatonin in order to repair damage.
And thanks so much for being with us. I know we just got a short amount of time. What else did you want to share with our people here about the coming 5G antennas, what we can do to stop it? How do we protect ourselves?
I would appreciate it if people would look at our website and share it with their friends and neighbors. It's ehtrust.org. And I very much hope that people can get involved. They need to write to the members of parliament, they need to write to the congressmen, and they need to demand congressional and parliamentary investigations now on this breaking story at the Chicago Tribune that documented that phones actually emit up to 5 times more radiation when tested next to the body. The scandal is that phone testing today is fraudulent. It's just as fraudulent as the diesel engine scandal. And the diesel engine scandal, I will remind you, resulted because cars were engineered by every diesel engine manufacturer, not just Volkswagen, to automatically reduce the emissions they released when they were hooked up to a computer to test them. That is why many European cities today are just clotted with smoky, dirty skies, because on the roads, they have all of these fraudulent diesel cars. You may have them in Canada as well, which are emitting up to 400 times the levels that they are supposed to for diesel emissions. Now, with phones, the test system for a phone takes a guy weighing over 200 pounds with a 12-pound head and puts the phone in a holster up to an inch off the body and then tests the radiation into the body. What's wrong with that?
That's not how people use it.
That's correct. And every millimeter off the body gives you 15% more radiation. So think about that, right?
Jeez.
An inch, 2.54 centimeters, 254 millimeters. It's huge. It's huge. And so not only did the Chicago Tribune break this story, but our website, ehtrust.org, shows you links to the French Frequency Testing Agency and the country of France release test data that the country of Canada and the country of the U.S. have not responded to. From a national agency in France, they tested over 400 phones. And those phones in France, 9 out of 10 failed to meet their standards and exceeded them by 2 to 4 fold. Now, if the French standards are applied to Canada and the U.S., then our phones exceed the current limits up to 11-fold. And that is a peer-reviewed publication by Professor Om Gandhi at the University of Utah. All of this can be found on our website. And we want to encourage people to be informed and to demand congressional and parliamentary investigations into what has gone on here. Because for years, through my book, Disconnect, which was published first in 2010, through letters to Congress, to testimony that I gave to your Health Committee of Parliament, to work with the Canadians for Safe Technology, with Frank Clegg and Meg Sears, we have been warning about this problem repeatedly. I would encourage you to talk with them as well, because Canada has a very vibrant community of people who have been concerned about this issue, and the government has shut them out totally because it has taken the advice that has been given to them by experts who are funded by industry. And there is a closed door here. If you look at the people in the United States who lead the Federal Communications Commission, they have come from industry and they go back to industry. It's just a revolving door. It is so blatant that Harvard University Law School Safra Center for Ethics issued a report that called the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, a captured agency. And that is why it's going to take you and many others to becoming better informed and to say, look, we like the technology. We're in favor of technology, but we are in favor of our health. We don't want to be opposing things, except we insist that they have to be shown to be safe. And safety testing, as Magda Havas has repeatedly reminded us, has never been demonstrated for 5G, nor for many of the other uses of this technology.
Devra, you're amazing. Thank you so much for joining us. And I know you've got to get back to work because you've got this breaking story to deal with. We really appreciate you. ehtrust.org.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much.
That was a conversation between blogger David Wolf and Dr. Devra Davis, founder of the nonprofit Environmental Health Trust. Her most recent book is Disconnect: The Truth About Cell Phone Radiation, What the Industry is Doing to Hide It, and How to Protect Your Family. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look at the newest programs or the podcast page. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.